This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
what makes this particularly difficult is that a lot of the people in Bono were unable to do agriculture because of the conflict. Increasing numbers of IDPs are coming now out as the counterinsurgency operations take root in Bono State, meaning that they don't have access to their own land and can therefore produce no food. And this hasn't happened only now. It's been happening for the last 4 years since the crisis started.
That was Ernest Mutanga of the Norwegian Refugee Council speaking from Maiduguri, Borno State, Nigeria. We'll have full story coming up.
Also, Angola, Kenya, and Rwanda will be holding high-stake, closely watched elections in August. A new report by Amnesty International highlights a surge in sexual violence in South Sudan. And Kenya and Tanzania agree to lift some trade restrictions between the two countries.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the food and security crisis in northeast Nigeria is forecast to get even worse between now and the end of August, moving the region closer to famine conditions. Ernest Mutanga is head of program for the Norwegian Refugee Council in Nigeria. He says armed conflict and violence are driving the food crisis. He spoke with me about the food insecurity situation and what lies ahead for millions of people in northeast Nigeria.
The situation is getting a bit worrying as we move into the lean season in this part of the world. The lean season happens, which is now till around September, October. Now, because the food stocks are often low at this time, an increasing number of people are unable to meet their food needs. People are into planting if they can afford to, but also levels of food stocks tend to go very low. And at the same time, you get an increase in price of food commodities because there's low food stock. The roads are impassable because of the rain. Delivery of food is difficult. So prices tend to rise. What that means is that those then that have a dependency on the market for access to food will have to pay more for the same amount of food that they would have procured earlier on. And if they don't have means of earning income, then it becomes increasingly difficult.
What do you anticipate in the month ahead?
We anticipate that it will gradually become worse as we move into the harvest season. What makes this particularly difficult is that a lot of the people in Bono were unable to do agriculture because of the conflict. Increasing numbers of IDPs are coming now out as the counterinsurgency operations take root in Bono State, meaning that they don't have access to their own land and can therefore produce no food. And this hasn't happened only now. It's been happening for the last 4 years since the crisis started. So increasingly less agricultural land is being put to use, and more people are getting displaced off their lands. And with such a situation, increasing numbers of people stay without adequate food for longer periods of time. And as a result, you will tend to see increasing numbers of malnourished children coming to the health centers because the families cannot afford to provide for their people.
How many people will be affected by this in the month ahead?
5.2 million people are said to be in need of food by the end of August. Obviously, that number will increase in the northeast. We've got different people that were judged to be in different phases of food insecurity. We had 55,000 assessed to be under famine-like conditions about 3 months ago. We had a population of about 1.4 million that were in the phase four of food insecurity, and we had 1.8 million people that were in phase three. Now, with the reduction of food supplies as you go into the lean season, there will be a tendency for more people to get into phase three and phase four of the food security scale. And that is what is worrying. because as I've told you, the numbers are many more that were in food security phase 3 that will then move into food security 4, and that is very worrying.
I understand access has been very difficult because of the instability in the region. So what lies ahead for humanitarian agencies?
The task now for us as agencies is try to make sure that we have got enough food stocks prepositioned to be able to supply the population. The problem with our response is that we've been largely underfunded, and this is what we're pushing for. We're pushing for adequate funds to support the entire humanitarian operation in the country. Our total bill from the humanitarian response plan was about $1 billion, about 50% of which was dedicated to food. Up to now, I think we funded around 30% of the entire HRP requirement.
What has the Nigerian government been doing to assist humanitarian agencies?
They are facilitating as much as they can. They are facilitating the access of humanitarians into areas of need. They've also got a program, what they call the PSNI, the Peace Initiative for the North, the Buhari Plan. Under that Buhari Plan, government has also been sourcing some food assistance, but is inadequate. They've not been able to marshal enough resources to cover all the needs. And this is why it is important that the humanitarian agencies that are here are provided the means to support the government in reaching out to those that need assistance.
That was Ernest Mutanga, head of program for the Norwegian Refugee Council. He spoke with me from Maiduguri in Borno State, Nigeria.
In other news on Nigeria, 2 months after President Muhammadu Buhari left for London for medical treatment, the government yesterday released a still photograph of the leader. The photo of Buhari, who's 74, was released amid growing concerns about his health. It's his second trip to London this year for medical treatment. The first lasted a month and a half. AP says the photo shows the Nigerian leader sitting and smiling as he met with a number of state governors. A statement says the meeting over lunch lasted about an hour and described Buhari as cheerful. A spokesman says Buhari will return to Nigeria as soon as the doctors give the go-ahead. However, his medical conditions has never been disclosed.
Also in Nigeria, 2 suicide bombers attacked a camp for the displaced late last night near the Borno State capital of Maiduguri. 3 people in the camp were killed, 17 others were wounded. AFP reports a male and a female detonated their explosives at the Delori 1 camp. A 3rd suicide bomber tried to attack the Delori 2 camp, but an official says that attacker was intercepted and killed. The Delori camps are about 15 kilometers from Maiduguri and provide shelter to about 50,000 people. The camps have been targets of attacks by Boko Haram militants before.
Three African nations are holding major elections in August: Angola, Kenya, and Rwanda. Although the nations are very different, the stakes are high for all of them, and the contests will be closely watched. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
First up is tiny, landlocked Rwanda, which will vote the first week in August. Once again, the undisputed favorite is the longtime president, Paul Kagame, who has ruled Rwanda since the end of the 1994 genocide. Horn of Africa analyst Mariti Mutiga of the International Crisis Group is expecting no surprises, but says the democratic exercise is an important one for Rwanda and its wealthy aid partners.
I think it matters to the extent that obviously there's been questions as to whether Rwanda is an authoritarian country, whether it respects the norms and practices of a democratic country, and especially as a major recipient of aid from the West.
In Kenya, the August 8th poll will be a tight contest between incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga. The European Union has decided not to send observers to Rwanda, but to deploy more than 100 observers to Kenya. Odinga's disputed loss in the 2007 election sparked weeks of political and ethnic violence across Kenya, taking the lives of more than 1,100 people. Since then, constitutional reforms have been implemented to prevent such violence. Mutiga says the August poll is a test of whether those reforms can hold.
This time, just as in 2007, the outcome will be close. the stakes are high for the candidates, and the institutions, especially the Electoral Commission, are struggling to cope with the huge responsibility on their shoulders.
Last is the oil juggernaut, Angola. On August 23rd, the Southern African nation will hold its first vote in decades without President José Eduardo dos Santos at the helm. The 74-year-old, who has taken several trips to Spain for medical reasons, is stepping down after 38 years in power. The poll itself is a straightforward two-way race between the longtime ruling party and the established opposition. Analyst Maya Bojon of business consulting firm Verisk Maplecroft told VOA that the real test will come after the election, when the new president will have to address slumping oil revenue, a foundering economy, and gaping inequalities. To do so, she says, the winner will have to untangle the complicated network of state resources, which remain largely controlled by President Dos Santos and his family. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
France is hosting a meeting tomorrow between the two most powerful men in Libya, hoping to find a political solution to the crisis there. The Associated Press says President Emmanuel Macron will host the head of Libya's UN-backed unity government, Fayez Sarraj, and General Khalifa Haftar, head of what's called the Libyan National Army. They'll meet in the outskirts of Paris. Sarraj and Haftar last met in May in the United Arab Emirates. They reportedly agreed on holding presidential and parliamentary elections next year. However, since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, there have been rival governments and militias vying for power.
Amnesty International has released a new report on what it calls a surge in sexual violence in South Sudan. The report, called Do Not Remain Silent, says since the outbreak of conflict in December 2013, thousands of South Sudanese have been subjected to sexual violence. It says this includes rape, gang rape, sexual slavery, sexual mutilation, torture, castration, and forced nudity. Amnesty says the violence is shocking in its scale and brutality. It warns victims will suffer physical, psychological, and social effects for decades to come. Amnesty says it bases its report on survivors of sexual violence. It says while the exact number of victims may never be known, the UN estimates between December 2013 and December 2016, more than 1,100 children were sexually assaulted. Amnesty says following the fighting in Juba a year ago, it documented cases of rape and gang rape involving 217 victims. It says sexual assaults happened along with other forms of violence such as killings, looting, and destruction of homes. The report criticizes South Sudanese authorities, accusing them of repeatedly failing to conduct thorough and impartial investigations or to hold those responsible to account. It says government and all opposition forces must ensure that their members cease acts of sexual violence by issuing clear orders prohibiting sexual violence and providing forces with appropriate training. South Sudan's government rejects the Amnesty report, saying most accusations cannot be substantiated.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yais Wuhib, and at 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Amid growing concerns about his health, the Nigerian government yesterday released a still photograph of President Muhammadu Buhari, who is in London for medical treatment. Angola, Kenya, and Rwanda will be holding high-stake, closely watched elections in August. And Amnesty International has released a new report on what it calls a surge in sexual violence in South Sudan. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
K Kenya and Tanzania have agreed to lift some trade restrictions between the two countries. A new deal calls for Kenya lifting its ban on imports of cooking gas and wheat flour, and Kenya will again allow imports of milk and cigarettes from Kenya. Kenya had banned cooking gas from Tanzania last April, saying there was a rise in illegal filling stations. Media reports say, however, Kenyans must still obtain visas when traveling to Tanzania for the time being. The agreement will also set up a joint technical committee dealing with such issues as trade, finance, energy, and agriculture.
In recent years, broad strides have been made in child and maternal health. A new study evaluates progress made by a $45 billion initiative created by the UN Secretary General called Every Woman, Every Child. The report shows that over the past 2 years, the initiative has provided 28 million women with contraceptives and 1 million women with family planning counseling. It also helped provide nearly 2 million newborns with improved care through training of women and midwives. Helga Fokstad is the executive director of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health, which is hosted by the World Health Organization. She told reporter William Eagle that despite global improvements, there's still work to be done, especially in Africa.
Globally, the numbers are better. The approximately 50% reduction was obtained globally in maternal mortality as well as child mortality. However, the statistics in Africa are not as good, and this is an area. 99% of all maternal deaths still happen in low-income countries, and 50% of this are still happening in sub-Sahara Africa. So this is an area that needs more attention. But I must tell you, this initiative has enhanced the data quality and the data availability, and so therefore now there's much more possibility of galvanizing partners behind prioritizing where focus is needed. So we're very hopeful in mobilizing common efforts in countries that need more help. But I could highlight, we have three commitments that I can just mention as examples from Africa. DRC is one. They have, and this is domestic investments. These are not partners, but this is government. So government has agreed to subsidize family planning services and reduce disparities in contraceptive access. And then they have agreed to improve emergency obstetric care and increase also domestic health spending from $5 to $15 per person by 2020. Malawi, this is another country that has really stepped up and has joined and has taken somewhat of a leadership role among 9 countries to improve quality, equity, and dignity. So it's called QED, and that they announced this in February in reducing maternal mortality by half by 2022. I was going to mention Nigeria. So Nigeria is committed to universal health coverage and to working with also improving equity. So that is something that is then needed in looking at how to improve not only services, but where to improve it and also provide timely services.
A part of your goal is to strengthen healthcare systems. But many, as evidenced by the Ebola crisis, are in quite bad shape. The movement, Every Woman, Every Child, supports, among other things, universal health care. How do you accomplish this goal in countries with very limited budgets and a lack of trained health care workers?
Well, here's the answer to that, which is in many ways very simple, because the reason you need a good healthcare system is to really ensure that what has been lacking behind receives attention. And that is women, and that is children, that is adolescents. It's reducing stillbirths. And so if you have lowered resources, then prioritize these, because the return on investment on these needs, on maternal care, on newborn care, on early childhood development, on adolescent care, you can prioritize. I must tell you, in most countries during the World War, what one did because one had scarce resources. One prioritized on vulnerable groups that one needed special attention. And healthcare was reduced immensely. So one doesn't need to think about universal health coverage as this extreme black hole or very expensive. One can make smart investments, scale them up, and sustain them.
Helga, what do you see as your main focus in the short term, in the next year or two?
One of the key activities within the partnership is to ensure accountability. So we have set up the commitments. We're following up the commitments. We have set up accountability mechanisms where we're going to use through our partners and through our constituencies to follow up not only the commitments, but also actions and investments and budgets and expenditures among all of our partners. We're going to really actually hold each other accountable here.
That's Helga Fogstad, the Executive Director of Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. She spoke with VOA's William Eagle. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yisroel Heeb in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We are happy to announce that VOA's FM station 98.1 is back on the air with all your favorite news and programs. Tune in every day 24/7. You can also listen to VOA's radio programs on our shortwaves, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are online at voanews.com.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
The Voice of America, VOA.